come over here. Come on over here. How you doing, Bill?
This is you being seductive, right?
I can't do it.
I just
want to
make
try.
Sure, yeah. I'm getting the vibe right.
It was my attempt.
This is you being seductive. Wow.
Come on over here.
I'm surprised you don't have 100 children. You only have the two.
Shut it.
All right. It's Bill and Wendy. It's a very
I
seductive
missed you.
Day.
So, you know, I'm kind of right. happy to see you.
Let's talk about on Friday, we had the chance to cover the White Sox home opener at Cork and Carry. Right across the street from Guaranteed Rate Field. You already had a day off. Now it,
yeah,
you couldn't
prior
get out
commitment.
Of it. There's nothing you could do.
And they moved the game, so,
right.
you know, from
right.
Thursday to Friday.
Right. So Harry Tynowitz filled in for you, did a very nice job. The downside, if there was one downside, and there were plenty of upsides, the people who came out were very, very nice, ardent White Sox fans, huge White Sox fans.
I love seeing the fans. I really do. I really was looking forward to seeing Harold Baines.
Yeah, we all were, but...
What happened? What do you say?
Harold Baines was not part of the program, Wendy. Here is WGN's own Dave Ennett to explain. Dave, hi. How are you?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Dave.
It was a great crowd, by the way.
Oh, the crowd was so nice.
You can tell, Dave, Bill's almost over it.
What happened?
Well, I wanted, like Wendy, you know what a baseball fan I am.
Oh, yeah.
And Wendy, I know what a big White Sox fan you are. Harold Baines, new
great
member
guy.
Of the Hall of Fame, by the way. Was scheduled to be our guest right out of the box, right out of the chute, mm-hmm. Harold Baines.
What a great way to start your show.
Yeah.
So as we're ramping up, everybody's getting ready for the broadcast. I go, is Harold, Harold will be here any second, you know, and we're all
live
ready.
Live in person, that's
live
exciting.
Live in person, Harold Baines. And then he didn't show for the first 5 minutes and the second 5 minutes and the third 5 minutes, and he never called, right? No.
What happened?
But Dave takes full responsibility.
I was walking over to Cork and Carry. I ran into him, and I called him Maglio. And he got there.
Oh, you can't call him that?
No. No, here's what happened. This is what happened. So I'm in the booth. We're broadcasting in our booth. And we did the show there
at
on Friday
Guaranteed
morning.
At Guaranteed Rate Field.
At Guaranteed Rate Field.
Across the street from where across. We were.
From the actual broadcast booth? Is that where you were?
Well, we have two booths. As you know, we have booth six, where we do our pregame and postgame stuff, and then that's where we were.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Ed and DJ have the actual
another booth, and they call that the John Wilkes booth. But I don't think they should,
God.
Dave. That's not it. That brings back bad memories.
No wonder Harold didn't show up.
So at 10 o'clock, you guys are on the other side of Armour Square Park, right?
Yes,
at Cork and Carry.
Yes,
and so it's a little after 10, and I'm getting ready to come over there.
Yeah,
and I'm the last one in the booth. Our engineer Paul Zarang is already over with Ed and DJ in the mm-hmm. other booth. I'm by myself in there, no one else around, and the door opens. And in walks a young lady who works for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And Harold Baines.
Oh.
Harold, how are you? And I'm like, okay, now why is he coming in here?
Yeah.
And she says, well, Harold's here for his 10:10 interview. I said, well, the show ended at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I think there must have been a miscommunication because we were on from 6 to 10 here.
Right.
But now they're across the street at Cork and Carry.
Yeah.
But it clearly said on the schedule, WGN radio booth, 10:10. So I said, gee, I'm sorry. There must have been some kind of miscommunication. But we are doing our show right now from Cork and Carry at the park. You want to go over there? And
yeah.
Harold didn't really indicate any great enthusiasm.
I don't blame
him.
You know what? If you came in for an interview at a certain location and it turned out to be another location, wouldn't that be a pain?
Well, he had other responsibilities in the ballpark leading up to the opener,
right.
So that's fine.
Well, how long of a walk or a run would it have taken from point A, where he was with you, to point B, where we were expecting him? Would it have been like a 5-minute walk, maybe, or what?
Well...
And
probably.
If you ran 3 minutes, because he's very fast. He's still
but
very fast.
You have to cross 35th. A lot of traffic at that point.
That's true.
You have to wait for one
and
of the
coach,
traffic.
You have to give him the steel sign to run across the street.
That too.
Yeah.
And so by this point, he's on his way out. And then I get a call from the station saying, hey, is Harold Baines there?
Oh.
And I said, no, I actually just sent him away.
Oh, Dave.
So,
Dave.
So
Dave.
Listen, I love Harold Baines. He's a Hall
do.
Of Famer.
Oh.
And I feel terrible. So I immediately went into the Ed and DJ booth.
Yes.
And our boss, Todd Manley's in there, along with some White Sox people. And they immediately are on the phone trying to get Harold back.
Sure, of course.
And unfortunately,
didn't play out.
The signals got crossed.
All right, it worked. I had Dave sabotage it because I wasn't there that
day. Don't say that. Wendy, at some point, Jasmine, our producer, I said to Jasmine, is he coming? And she makes a call, and she keeps giving me that 1 minute. I'll know soon. And then there's a lady standing there, and she says to me, he's on his way. Harold Baines is on his way. And I go, thank you, like that. And then I say to Jasmine, who is that lady? And Jasmine just shrugs. She doesn't know who that is. It was just a lady who was there to watch the broadcast. But she wanted so badly to help. You know, she saw us scrambling.
And can I tell you, we were having a pre-show meeting before the broadcast, and Jasmine's question was, is there contact information in case any guests fall through?
Right.
So thank God she got that information.
Right. That's very true. That's very true.
And thank God the listener told you he was coming.
Yeah, she was wrong, but it was comforting to hear that, you know, in a situation like that. But this really, you know, this was because you felt very bad.
And I tried to feel terrible about
this. It's not your fault.
It was just a series. It was a perfect storm of events all going wrong. But I just want to apologize to you and to Harry and Wendy, even though Wendy wasn't on the show.
There's no apology.
The moral of the story here is Dave stood up and took responsibility without even being asked.
Right.
Right.
You don't see a lot of that anymore,
right,
Dave.
A lot of us would just
Steve.
I don't know Harold Baines.
Right. Right. And you have to admit, Harold Baines is a man of few words. So on Friday, it wasn't that different. I mean, he was a man of no words on Friday, but there's not that big of a difference between few words and no words.
That's true. But actually,
he's a chatter.
When he realized that he didn't have to do the interview, it was kind of a nice grin that spread across his face.
He was skipping, throwing glitter as he skipped.
Well, it turned out okay. I listened to a little of the broadcast, then I watched the game, and they won the game. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate
Again,
it.
Again, I'm sorry.
No, you have nothing to be sorry. You have nothing to be sorry.
Harold is on his way over right now. We'll get him in here.
Bring
one
him over.
Day.
All right. Yep. All right. Now, when Chet Lemon makes the Hall of Fame, what's going to happen? Same thing or different? We'll see.
Opening day, it'll be the same.
Same
day.
Thing. Same thing. All right. Thanks, Dave. We'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy. That's still your seductive voice, right?
No.
Still,
that
it's
was
a different
my
voice.
Voice.
It's a different voice. Can I tell you one other strange thing about Friday?
Yes.
I had some work to do here at the office before the broadcast on Friday, so I drove here, and I had said to Todd, our boss, the day before, hey, if that's the case, is there anybody leaving from here going to White Sox Park? I'll just ride with them. And he goes, yeah, we'll find you somebody. It's not a problem. So I was in early on Friday doing some work in the office, and I can't find Todd to try to arrange a ride. So I'm heading out, and I see a couple of the sales guys walking down the hall, one of them Brad. And I go, Brad, you're not by any chance going to White Sox Park, are you? He goes, I am. I go, could I catch a ride with you? He goes, sure, absolutely. Come on with me. So I go over to his cubicle, and he's working on some stuff. He's typing some stuff, and a couple minutes pass by, and we're talking while he's working, and a few more minutes pass by, and 20 minutes pass by. And I go, just out of curiosity, because now it's coming up on Showtime.
Right.
I go, you're going to the game soon, right? And he goes, oh, no, not till later on today.
Right, because the game wasn't starting till 1. He was going to come in maybe the tail end of the broadcast. Yeah, that didn't work. So what happened to you?
I ran like crazy to get a cab and cabbed it over.
You had to cab
it? But then he said later, I'm so sorry. He goes, I wasn't putting the time frame together because he did show up, you know, just before game time. And he goes, I'm so sorry. He goes, I just wasn't adding the hours up properly. But that's all right.
Poor little Bill Leff had a bad start to the Friday.
You know, I enjoy a challenge. You got to love a challenge, and that's what Friday was a nice big long challenge, and that's all right.
Is there a difference between challenge and challenging?
Yeah, one of them's more severe, but I can't remember which one of the two is more severe. Congratulations to Coach Joel Quenneville, who we were all very worried about.
I wasn't. I don't want anybody else to have him. It's like breaking up with a boyfriend.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
I so totally understand that. Isn't it going to be strange when the Blackhawks play the Panthers and you see him coaching, but it won't be for us?
Yeah,
that'll be very peculiar.
Yeah, you don't want an ex. You don't want to be with them, but you don't want them to have anyone else.
Well, you know what's strange is in a lot of sports, like when a player goes to another team, you see them in another team's uniform, and I don't know about you, but my brain doesn't accept it.
Yeah.
You go, that guy should be wearing a Bulls uniform.
Yeah, they don't look good in the new colors.
No. But for Joel Quenneville, he will he'll still be wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Right? So that won't change. He'll just be near guys wearing uniforms that are not the Blackhawks uniforms. And that ain't right.
No, and I hate Nashville's jerseys. Can I just say that? That you gold.
Oh.
I just don't like
the Florida
it.
Panthers?
No, I'm talking Nashville.
I know, I switched gears on you.
I just, because he's talking about different uniforms.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't remember what color the Panthers are, but they're, Nashville, that gold is just...
It's like a incandescent gold, too. It's like a glowy gold.
It's like a bunch of cabs skating around. I don't like
that
it.
That was almost their team name. They were almost the Cabs.
And I love our winter classic jerseys that the Hawks
the black
have been
ones.
Wearing. Yeah, those are really
I
may
nice.
I have to maybe get one. They're really cool.
Oh, I like them too. I definitely like them. So now that the Blackhawks season is over and we can look back on it, what do you think?
Still a fan?
Still a huge fan.
They got their burst of adrenaline maybe a tiny bit too late.
Yep.
And, you know, I get mad at people that say, you know, what a disappointment. You know who's disappointed the most? The players.
I would think.
They right. wanted this too. And I, you know, and there are other people that say they just weren't hungry enough. Oh, no, they were hungry. They couldn't get it happening. I'm looking forward to next year. What else can you say?
I am too. The building blocks are definitely there, and it's a good combination of the guys who have been there to the finals several times and a bunch of new blood that looks really good. So,
Corey Crawford came back unbelievably strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think next year is it.
Your big three scorers, your Jonathan Toews, your Patrick Kane, and your Alex DeBrincat, had amazing seasons.
DeBrincat's unbelievable.
He really seriously is. So, so there's no reason to really hang your head. It's very sad that they didn't make the playoffs for the second year in a row because we got so used to it for so long of seeing them in the playoffs. But I don't think it's anywhere near the end of the line for these guys.
No way.
I really don't. I do think, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine about this who knows way more about hockey than me, and we agreed that the loss of Marian Hossa is still being felt by that team.
That is what turned everything around.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. That seems when everything
is,
failed
right?
was when Marian Hossa left.
Yeah. Because it was so unexpected. There was no time to prepare for it.
And he's so great.
He's so great on the ice. And then whenever you hear guys who are talking about the clubhouse, about how helpful he was, you know, he was a grizzled veteran who had seen it all. And he could tell guys about various situations. And I know that that's normally the coach's job to do it, but it's also really nice to have a fellow player point those things out. And I think that's a loss that maybe now that it's a couple years removed, you know, we can try to get around it. But
and Panarin going away was not good.
That was wouldn't mind having him back.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, there's so many guys. Chalmerson's a guy that I miss every time.
Oh yeah, that
they
was another one.
So many guys. Yeah. But they'll rebound. They'll be okay. I think next season will be a very different Blackhawks team. I really do.
I'm kind of glad now that it's warm, getting warm. It's going to be in the 70s today, away from the lake.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of glad hockey's over. It's like if we weren't going to win it,
right?
Pull off the Band-Aid.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't want the playoffs.
Oh.
You just flat out didn't want them, Steve?
That's what you
got in the way?
Well, it's just there was no chance, so now it's like, okay, let's just...
Except, like, all right, so last year they were eliminated with weeks to go in the season. This time it really did come down to the last week.
Which made it more exciting, and they did turn it around.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
I like Toews and Kane playing on the same line. That's something different that Coach Q didn't really do.
Not lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will he put Toews and Kane together
with the Florida Panthers?
He
could write them in.
First thing is introduction this morning. He said, well, I want to get Toews and Kane.
That's how they hired him.
Kane are back on the line.
Based on that. They're like, oh, that worked in the past.
Although, I don't know how much change can happen now. The trade deals are not going on. But what if he starts stealing some Blackhawks?
I wonder if he'll make a try at that.
I think they've got a security system at the United Center. That'll be fine.
intruder alert.
I'm not worried about it. Even if he kept his keys.
He was wearing a face mask, but there was a hole where his mustache was. We knew it was him. It was so obviously him. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us during the show, we're very easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. A lot of criticism over the weekend for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or do you say AOC, Wendy?
That's what I say.
AOC.
Because I never get her name right.
Well, I thought the AOC was a division of the NCAA finals. I thought that that was a region. I didn't realize it was a person.
Is that over yet, by the way?
No, one more night. Tonight's the final game. All right, so a lot of criticism for her because she made a speech on Friday in New York for the National Action Network, and she used what people are saying was an excessive Southern drawl to get her points across. I'll play the audio for her.
Yeah, I'm
for
not you. Familiar with this.
All right, so here is Friday night as she's addressing a crowd that was predominantly African American. That enters into it too. You'll hear why next. Listen to this.
I'm proud to be a bartender. Ain't nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with working retail, folding clothes for other people to buy. There is nothing wrong with preparing the food that your neighbors will eat. There is nothing wrong with being a working person in the United States of America.
So here, this is from CNN. They
I'm
write
not hearing a lot of it.
Have you heard her speak yes. normally? There's not a lot of it, but there's undertones.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So it says here on CNN's website, the implication is that she altered her speech slightly in addressing a group of black voters and civil rights leaders. This is the latest line of attack against AOC, and it's laughable. Again, this is according to CNN. Code switching, which is the practice of adjusting one's speech or vocal patterns depending on the setting, is not the exclusive province of politicians, nor should it be the focal point of her speech. This controversy simply shows how threatened some people feel by this freshman congressman because they're willing to critique her for virtually anything. Now, during the crosstalk with John Williams, you made a very good point that the fabulous Oprah Winfrey does this
girlfriend talk
all the time.
Yes, she yeah. goes back and forth. We kind of do that with our friends.
Everybody does this. Everybody does this.
Although, do you do it when you're speaking somewhere? I mean, I would probably hold back, and I, when I'm speaking somewhere, I'm seeing something, whatever, if I'm in front of an audience, I tend to be more professional.
Right, but isn't that, even just by doing
that's
that...
That's different, too. Yeah.
Right?
I'm code switching.
I once heard a film critic talking about Robert Duvall's work in The Godfather, and you know how much I love The Godfather, and he pointed this out, and I never noticed it. He goes, the reason Robert Duvall is so amazing in The Godfather is, depending on who he's speaking to, depending on who his character is speaking to, he changes his voice and he changes his personality. Because we all do that. If you're talking to somebody who's above you, you talk a certain way. If you're talking to friends that you've had for 20 years, you talk a certain way. If you're talking to your mom or your dad, you talk a certain way. Your kids.
Your kids, yeah.
Your speech changes depending on who your audience is, whether it's one person or 5,000 people. You just automatically adapt, you know?
Your speech and your delivery changes. 100%.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of does this.
So what do you think the criticism means? I mean, I know that she's been, you know, she's been criticized for several
for
things
everything.
In the past. And I get that. And I know that that's the way the game of politics is played, is when new players enter the game, you take a jab or two at them. I get that also. But I don't see anything wrong with what we just heard was just a snippet of that speech. And she does it throughout the speech. And she talks about, you know, that where she grew up, that was the way she talked. You know, that she looked out and she saw a crowd that was the people that she grew up with, and she fell into that. I get that. I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, she gets critiqued for everything. And it's funny because I was talking to someone over the weekend and they just were saying, oh, God, that Ocasio-Cortez, what a piece of work. And I just said, why?
Right.
Well, because she speaks her mind to it's like there was no answer for that.
Right.
It's just you're kind of trained to not like someone not on your team.
Right. This is a strange example of this, but it's one I'll make anyway. My mom grew up in an area that she called the old neighborhood. And in the old neighborhood where she grew up, it was a lot of people who came over from Europe and English was their new language. And it wasn't always spoken perfectly, right? Whenever my mom would tell a story, if she'd run into people from the old neighborhood, whenever she would talk about them, her language suffered because she was putting herself in the mindset of the people that she grew up around, and she'd say, she'd be telling a story about a conversation, and she goes, and he says, and then I says, and then he says, and then I says, and I'd go, Mom, I says? Like, it never even occurred to her. It was just, that was the vernacular of the way people spoke in the old neighborhood, and because the story took place in the old neighborhood, that's the way the story was told.
And I mean, come on, Bill, you know this. You work the room. And if
always,
you know, if you're going back, you know, if I go back and see some of my high school friends, maybe I will be saying, oh, that is grody to the max, because you're going back right. to your high school years.
Right, right, right. A text says, no, everybody doesn't speak or do the girlfriend thing. I'm black and I never do that. I don't think all people do it to that extent. However, Oprah Winfrey is a good example. And I think she'd be the very first person to tell you that she would pull that out when she needed to pull that out. And that on her show, it was an almost daily event. At some point during the show, you know how much I watch The View. Whoopi Goldberg does it almost every day, too.
Does she?
Yeah. And I'm fine with it. She also, Whoopi Goldberg, to her credit, also pulls out a Valley Girl a couple of times a week. You know, it's different characters from the past that she just kind of puts into any given situation. But I think to some extent, depending on who you are and what you do, depending on what your daily circle of conversations are, that's going to be part of the game.
Does Donald Trump change for anybody?
What a great question.
Because I don't know. I think he's pretty much consistent. And I'm not criticizing him. I am merely asking a question. And listeners, you feel free to jump in. 312-981-7200. I kind of, for a while, when he first held office, I almost felt there's a time when he's reading a teleprompter and addressing the nation where he is doing the professional Donald Trump, not off script Donald Trump. But then other times, I don't feel he changes to any different group he's talking to.
Isn't that something?
He's always pretty much who he is. True to himself? Is that a good thing, a bad thing?
I can't think of an example where he alters his vocal pattern.
Mm-mm. He's always
I honestly
the same.
Cannot.
He's the only person.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Wow. Good call on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, because even other presidents, you've seen them kind of change depending on their surroundings, right? But maybe not.
Because I've heard Barack Obama go into the talk.
Yeah.
The neighborhood talk.
Right, right, right.
The Hawaii talk.
Where he just says pineapple a lot and we don't know why.
Yes.
All right, what are your thoughts on this? We're 312-981-7200. Should she be criticized? Should Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez be criticized for her speech over the weekend on Friday?
Were
or
people
not?
There bothered by it, or just onlookers who heard the tape?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that the media jumped on it immediately. Some defending her, some saying essentially, you know, that you don't, this is the last thing you want to do if you're a politician. You don't want to change your ways just because of the audience, but you kind of do. Believe me, when I did stand up, because the personality of every crowd was different depending on what sort of a venue it was or what part of the country you were in, you had to change things up a bit.
She is a member of Congress. Come on. What about our president? Seriously.
Yeah.
Don't you badmouth our great president. I wasn't. I was just saying he's true to himself, but...
Right. If I know this is a weird way to say it's a compliment. I don't know if it's a compliment, but it is true. I can't think of any examples with Donald Trump where he has altered his way of speaking based on the people who were there with him. If it's happening, I'm not seeing it. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, but that's a great call on him because he doesn't seem to want to do that at all.
And 815, that's crazy. Don't have any feelings one way or another about her, but hearing that, I couldn't detect anything wrong. I think we are so oversensitive. Just, again, you stick to your team, and if someone deviates even just a fraction of an inch, everybody pounces.
You know what, though? If you're used to, I don't hear her speak constantly, but I have heard her speak in the past. And there's a much more official, more dignified cadence to her voice. Like in the very beginning of that, can you play the clip again? She uses the word ain't, which normally you'd say, boy, I don't know about a member of Congress using the word ain't, but it kind of fit what she was saying. Let's listen to it again.
I'm proud to be a bartender. Ain't nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with working retail, folding clothes for other people to buy.
See, how many other congresspeople can you think of that say ain't and don't apologize for it immediately?
But that was a colloquialism. Ain't nothing wrong. You know what I mean? She wasn't.
But the colloquialism fit into the... Remember that woman that was all over the internet? I ain't got no time for that a couple of years ago. It was almost... It was almost that kind of a speech pattern.
Cortez is clueless. Please stop defending her just because you agree with her party. Please. There are a lot of people that stick with the party. I'm really thinking we should do away with the whole party system. Pick the person that... I mean, it doesn't...
Pick the person best for the job.
End of discussion.
Yeah. I know.
I'm not going to stick with my party if they're doing something stupid.
Right. Right, right, right.
She gets criticized for everything.
Yeah, I know. I know. All right, let's do this. Your thoughts on this at 312-981-7200. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Laughlin, it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a speech that was made on Friday. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was making a speech in which she altered her voice a bit.
Slightly. It wasn't even a lot.
Just slightly. Right.
I think it's the word ain't. I mean, really.
Well, that kind of was a table setter for the way she spoke afterwards. A lot of people are saying, hey, you're not mentioning Hillary Clinton. She did it more than one occasion. There was one in particular I remember where she was speaking to a Southern group, and there all of a sudden there was a drawl in her voice that I never heard before.
Can I tell you something? We went on a family vacation to Georgia. I can't remember the town, but we were there for a family reunion, my aunt's family, and all the people that were from there had this very, very Southern drawl.
Yeah, right.
And you kind of would hear it, and then, you know, like they called it Coca-Cola instead of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And so you found yourself kind of doing it. You're not making fun, but it just, you kind of pick it up. Somebody, 847 says, when I talk to people with a foreign accent, I speak to them in a fake accent. I don't even realize I'm doing it. My kids always tell me to stop. It just comes out that way.
It's always funny to me whenever I see people speaking to somebody who are more foreign and they talk louder, slower and louder. Because if you don't understand the words at normal pitch, because you're speaking louder to them, they're not going to go, oh, now I understand what you're talking about because you're yelling it at me.
But if you're trying to communicate with someone, and it's weird because they don't do it back to you, but I found myself doing it because it's like, okay, here's what I mean. And it's like, I don't know if that works.
Right. And you use your hands more because that'll certainly illustrate your point. 773 says, Donald Trump does this all the time. He's different when speaking at rallies or when he's making fun of somebody or when he's angry or flustered. And how about when he tries to read a teleprompter? That may be the difference. Whenever there's been a major speech in the last couple of years, we always go, which Donald Trump will we get?
Teleprompter. The presidential one. Yes.
Yeah.
Or the real one.
Yeah. Where he's reading the words that somebody said, it would really be in your best interest, sir, if you just read what's on the script. Please, please, please. But sometimes he'll fall into that.
Listen, I cannot rely on Saturday Night Live Weekend Update for my news, but I did not hear the clip of Donald Trump talking about an anti-climb wall that he had put together. He really called it that?
It's an anti-climb. They call it the anti-climb.
Yeah.
That is hysterical. I mean, really?
Unintentionally, but yeah.
I did not know that at all, and I feel sorry that I missed that, but boy, that was funny.
Here's one I want to read really quickly, and thank you for saying this, 815. I don't know if everyone will agree with you. It says, you two are very fair. I lean conservative, and you're always even-handed. We try our best to be. I mean, neither of us make any bones about the fact that we're not fans of the current president. But depending on what the story is, this is a story that's really not about Donald Trump. You asked a very good question about whether he's somebody that does change his voice depending on who he's around.
And it wasn't a slam. And as you mentioned, it's almost sort of a compliment that he stays true to himself.
I do think I'm not one to compliment him very often. You know that?
I know.
But if you are going to give him a tip of the cap, in this particular instance, he is one person who's just oblivious to the fact or doesn't care about the fact that you do want to alter your thoughts and your speech depending on who's out there. So, you know, so maybe that's one of the things that people like most about him is that he seems to be above that somehow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, whether you are, I really don't like that you have to choose whether you're a Republican or Democrat. I really don't.
Yeah.
And I think we should all, in a way to get along. I know this sounds so simple, but it's never going to happen. You know, pick a little to the left or a little to the right, but shouldn't our goal be to hover around the middle?
You would almost think. I remember there's a relative of mine who years ago was explaining to me that whoever was chosen by his party, my relative was a Republican, he was going to get his vote. And I said, what if it was a guy or a girl that you hated? And he goes, I don't care. If that's who my party wants, that's who I want. And I shrugged, like, I don't understand that way of thinking.
I don't either.
At all.
I mean, John McCain almost got me to vote Republican.
I have voted Republican and I have voted Democrat. It always depends on who the person is.
And it should be the best person for the job.
It seems so obvious. Why isn't that so obvious to people?
And I know, well, say you identify as a Republican and, you know, most of the issues you support are supported by the Republican Party.
Right.
And it's a very close contest to see who's going to control the U.S. House of Representatives.
Yes.
Now, in your particular district, the Republican member of Congress is a schlub. You don't like him.
Yes.
He's running against a Democrat. You like her a lot. She looks great. She could be great.
Yeah.
But if you vote for her and he loses, your ideals, your issues could lose control of the House and you would lose nationwide.
So you still could vote for a schlub just to keep your ideas in motion.
Yeah, that's a scenario where you would do that.
I couldn't do it, Steve.
I couldn't either.
I could not do it. And I have been faced with that on more than one occasion when voting, where I go, I know for party reasons it would be this way, but for personal reasons, I can't give my vote to that guy or that girl because I just don't believe in them. And I don't know why.
Alone like that. I mean, I feel like that, too. And I think a lot of people feel like that, too. But there are other people who want to keep the party alive. And why, again, can't we do away with the parties? Why do we have to have them?
Well, it's almost the same argument, because I've been saying all along, the Electoral College must go.
Yes.
It has to go. It's outdated.
Run for president and change all these things. The no party party.
No, nobody wants that. Nobody.
The I ain't partying party.
Yes. That's the name. All right.
I mean, and I don't mean this seriously because people are going, you're so stupid. You can't. I'm just making a comment. This is my opinion. And I wish we could just more hover around the middle and lean a little left or lean a little right. But, you know, both sides on the far left and far right are the problems. And everybody's pushing away from the middle now.
Right.
I want the middleman back.
Yes.
Oh, I love trash.
Anything dirty or dingy or dusty, anything ragged or rotten or rusty, yes, I love
trash.
I can't believe I remember
really
the words.
Look at this. I
was impressed by you on sharing the lead vocals there. That was very nice.
I am a grouch,
yeah.
So Oscar and I have that going for us,
yeah.
Which is nice.
Yes,
there are garbage pickup days weekly in various communities, and then once a year they have various weekends where it's spring cleanup. So you can put anything out. You can go through your attic. You can go through your basement.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new bed. We went from a queen size to a king size bed. And I'm telling you now, I don't know how we survived in a queen bed for 20 years.
It's much better, isn't it? That extra space?
Yes.
Yep.
I don't know how we did it.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this nice bed, and it was just sitting disassembled in the hallway. So we're like, it's cleanup day. Let's bring it outside. So we lugged it outside along with like an old dresser and just things we were getting rid of. And then I started getting sentimental because I thought, that's the bed that, you know, we have two kids. Maybe we should keep it.
Oh.
And Jim's like, for what? Where are we going to put it?
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. I feel bad getting rid of it.
And you then, mean like the
bed?
Yes. The mattresses?
No, the wooden frame of the bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
The mattresses we got rid of before.
With no emotional attachment whatsoever?
No, actually the bed frame for some reason, it was just like, that's our bedroom set.
I think the mattresses were more involved, frankly.
Don't you have to go get your Wintrust business lunch
I'll
ready?
See you tomorrow.
I just got a little sentimental. Like if I was putting a crib out there, which we still have in the attic because I can't let go of
that.
Because, you know, maybe someday I'll be a grandma. But then I'm thinking things are going to change so much, you know, safety wise.
Yeah, okay. Right.
One more thing.
Yes.
I have either my kids or my crib in our basement for the same reason.
You're not sure which it is?
And it would be completely illegal now to put a kid in one of those cribs.
Mine is probably more current because Michael's only 19 years old, and it was pretty... I don't know if there's been changes in the last 19 years about
They're always
cribs.
Making little tweaks.
Yeah, but guys, we grew up in a crib that, you know, was rickety and, you know, we...
Mine had a Cuisinart attachment that you could put on the crib. I could make diced vegetables while I was teething if I wanted to. That can't be safe.
No.
There's no
but
way
But I can't
safe.
Let go of the crib. So the crib's still in the attic, which if I'm telling you, if we ever need it,
yeah.
we're never going to be able to get it down from the attic. It's just,
it's
I don't know how we
there?
Got it up there.
Yeah.
First of all, rickety steps, yeah. those pull down stairs, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm looking at the bed and I'm thinking, I'm getting a little sentimental. It's mm-hmm. part of our bedroom set. And, mm-hmm. and Jim's like, you're crazy. Don't you like the new bed? I said, I love it. Oh my God. Yeah. I put it together myself. It's metal. I love it.
But just for sentimentality
kind
you wanted
of.
To keep it around
it kind of bugged it. Me and then I got over it and the day went on and then I thought you know well somebody's gonna pick it up because there are trucks that drive around the neighborhood during these cleanup days
yeah
there are pickup trucks with really high sides so a lot of people scrap metal
right.
and take things
right
and I said well maybe somebody who really needs our bed is gonna take our bed
oh.
And then I'll feel better about it.
Would you put a post-it note on there telling them the story, the backstory?
No.
All right.
No.
I hope you have good luck with this.
I didn't.
We have two sons that were conceived on this frame.
I didn't take it that far.
All right.
But
good.
When putting it outside, I made sure the headboard and footboard and sideboards and all the slats were all together.
Oh.
Just so if somebody wanted it,
it's
I'm
an
like.
Easy pickup.
And it's still in pretty great shape, albeit 20 years old, but really in great shape. It's
right.
beautiful. It's a shaker style.
Yeah.
So I finally said, okay, whatever, you know, maybe somebody will use it. And then as the day went on, no one was picking it up. Then I got mad and I'm like, what is wrong with our stuff?
Right.
Why is someone not picking it up? Do they think I have cooties? What is the deal?
By that point, was pick it up trash day already a thing of the past or was
no,
it still ongoing?
They
you
didn't
still
pick it up till this morning. So it was still out, but it was getting
Nobody
dark.
Took it, though.
And then finally... Last night I peeked out,
mm-hmm.
and it was dark, and
mm-hmm.
the bed was gone.
Oh,
so someone
That's
has
nice.
Our bed frame.
That's very good.
But the little kids' like school desk that I put out there,
yeah.
no one took that.
I don't think you should take it personally.
I did
people
take it personally. They don't
assess,
want my trash.
Well, a lot of times, like when they do that alley pickup, because we leave stuff in our alley too, and people pick up those strangest things. But I think a lot of it's just. For the metal and stuff, isn't it? They
well,
just melt it down.
Yeah, they can turn that in and get money for it.
Right.
But I got to be honest with you. There is a table in our basement, our finished basement, that I garbage picked
mm-hmm.
on one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
There was a chair we put out there for trash pickup that went pretty quickly. Someone took that, and I was kind of embarrassed because I think we garbage picked it from our neighbor Jack and Julie
oh, wow.
like 5 years ago.
Wow.
So then I felt bad, like they're going to think, oh, I don't like their chair anymore.
I'm sure they've forgotten about it by now, you don't think?
I don't know. And then there was like this this wooden a really nice little desk set. It was like a bookcase and a desk and a bottom portion bookcase.
Yeah.
And I garbage picked that maybe 8 years ago.
Wow.
And now it just was cluttering up Michael's room. So I felt like, what if those poor people that I garbage picked from came and saw it? They'd go, hey, there's our stuff. I turned this all into an emotional thing.
It seems like everyone on your block has other neighbors' furniture in their
home.
We
share.
Yeah, it seems like it.
We do.
When they do this, we'll pick up anything day, do they mean anything?
No, will not TV sets. You cannot leave TV sets out, which I was going to leave it out because somebody usually takes it.
Yeah.
But I think Best Buy, you can go take your old things in various locations. If you look online, either your town or various towns in your area will do like an electronic pickup.
Oh, they will.
Yeah. Or drop off. You got to drop it off there. There's a new site, a place in Burridge, I know, that just opened that will, if you have a TV that doesn't work, which we have three.
Oh. Three of them.
Yeah, I think so.
What are you
so.
Waiting for on those?
You don't know where to take them, and then it's like, you know,
yeah.
it's not pressing because it's...
Oh, I guess. So what are they doing differently with the trash on that particular week, on the we'll come and get anything week, that they're not doing the rest of the year? Because shouldn't that be the rule
No, because
all the time?
I don't know how you do it in LaGrange. You pay for garbage stickers per can, or you can pay a monthly service and get a big garbage... bin
mm-hmm.
and then they pick it up. You wheel it out in front, they mm-hmm. pick it up, you pay a monthly service. That's what we do, because I was getting sick of getting the stickers.
And it's for only things that'll fit within that yes. container.
So if you have something, like I think when we got rid of our mattress, I looked on the site to make sure they accept mattresses, but then you had to tape two garbage stickers to it so they would pick it up. That's almost like a specialty thing. So this is one day a year that really you can go through anything you want.
I know I'm a dreamer, but shouldn't that be part of the taxes that you pay, that they pick up your garbage? Why is that an extra charge?
I don't know.
Because ours is the same way, and I always wonder... This used to be included in the service.
See, I agree with you. And our schools are great in LaGrange. Our taxes are disgusting. Yeah. They're really so high. I can't believe it. Doesn't that help with the garbage pickup?
You would imagine, right?
I mean, when I was a kid, there were some garbage men that used to come to my childhood home that were very nice looking. And all I know is that I would sometimes watch them pick up the stuff. And if my mom had a bunch of things that she had to get rid of that week, she'd leave a cold six-pack of beer there.
Oh.
And they didn't argue, and they, thanks.
Right. It's a nice little perk. Right.
But, yeah, I don't understand why we
I'm
have to pay for
that. Why that's an extra
Tony
charge.
Soprano, waste management. Right. It's all his fault.
It makes sense.
I think so.
All right. We will continue this in a little bit. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Can I read some texts to you, Wendy? Would you like me to read some texts?
Yes.
Here's one from 708. Not everybody in 708, just one guy or girl, I'm guessing. My brother-in-law had a leather lounger on the curb that somebody picked up as he was leaving for work in the morning. But when he came home from work, it was back on the curb. I wonder what happened there.
Okay, see, that's not fair. If you take something...
It's yours.
You can't give it back after the garbage pickup happened.
Right.
If you take it... You have to at least keep it to the next week's garbage disposal, and then you put it out in front of your house.
Agreed. That's in the commandments. That's one of the commandments. 630 says, there is no way, Wendy, that you will use that old crib for your grandchildren.
I know.
Please let go of these things. They are just things, and they are weighing you down, and it is so odd when people get offended when others don't want their cast-off stuff.
Boy, she's
there's something
here.
There.
She's got me pegged.
That's something definitely there.
Yeah, it's like when your daughter doesn't want your wedding dress.
Ah, did that happen to you, Mary?
Well, it did happen. Yes,
but now
they wouldn't want my crib either.
But see, now the wedding dress you can repurpose into a baptismal gown for a baby.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Did you do that?
No, I made hers from scratch. I made a baptismal
or an awful cocktail dress.
But
you could also turn that.
I'm still waiting.
If
someone might want my wedding dress.
Oh, Mary, that's
I don't
sad.
Know who. My daughter tried it on. But, you know, it had the big poofy sleeves.
Yeah.
Well, see, that was the question I was going to ask you from the 80s, first of all.
I'm like, tear them off. I don't care.
You could repurpose it and just change it up a little bit.
Yeah, you can do a lot with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, yeah, someone I know, their daughter didn't want their wedding dress either, but they made it into this, a portion of it into a baptismal gown.
You should have done that.
It was really beautiful.
That's not a bad idea.
I didn't
want
to rip it up, though. I still felt, I don't know.
What are you going to do with it?
I don't know.
Although I still have mine.
It's like a Lady Di wedding dress, you know, with the big sleeves.
Can I tell you something
that
I
still have yours, too.
Yeah.
Here's something that I've kept because of emotional reasons, but when I tell you, you'll...
Laugh at you?
Yes. Prepare. I'm cleaning out a closet, and I find a tin that would normally be for mints, for Altoids.
Uh-huh.
And I go, what happened there? Why do I have Altoid mints? And I shake it, and it's not Altoid mints, but when I open it up, it's my children's teeth.
I knew you were going to say that. How would I laugh
how
at you?
How eerie is that?
Go look in the upper drawer of my dresser right now, and in each little envelope, spoiler alert if there are children listening...
Well, I guess you have to be careful.
You walked me into that wormhole.
Well, I thought when my kids were babies, I thought I was going to be a dentist, so I just pulled their teeth. Did I save myself on that?
That's good.
But still, after I found them, and I opened it up, and it was a combination of going, and then at the same time, you go, aw.
I know. And you did you put them together? Because then you don't even know who's... Because I started for a while where each envelope, you know, you would... Again, if there are kids, earmuffs right now, because, you know, you'd have two different envelopes so you can swap it out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So then you'd get the original, and I started, you know, I put the child's name and what number tooth it was and the date. That lasted maybe two or three teeth.
Right.
And there's just a bunch of envelopes in there.
Right. So at the end of this, my decision was, because even though it was semi-disgusting
you
to open
throw
up
them
a tin.
Out.
No, I still couldn't throw them away.
You can't. You have your DNA, their DNA
the
if you ever want to clone them.
But then I was thinking, but if it were other body parts that I found, I would probably throw them away.
Depends what it was.
Teeth
it. My brother kept his appendix in a little Gerber's baby food jar with formaldehyde. He probably still has it.
For what reason, though?
Because it was part of
just
him.
Yeah?
He was pretty young when he got his appendix removed, and I think at that point it was cool for a kid to look.
Right.
I don't know if it made the move when he moved away.
But I think even if I showed them to my children, their reaction would be, why did you save those? And I don't know why. I have no idea why, but again, I couldn't throw them away. This would be so easy. They're already in a case. All I have to do is throw them away. Couldn't make my hand throw them away.
It's a tiny Altoids case. It's not taking up much room.
Right.
I found, while cleaning out, too, because it's junk day, there was a manila envelope, and in it were about, I don't know, 15 pipes, or pacifiers. We call them pipes in our family.
Yeah.
And when we were trying to get Michael to give up his pipe, we said we need to send it to Dr. Joe, our dentist, because they disinfect them and send them to poor kids who don't have pacifiers.
The pipeless children.
Yes. So he believed me. Yeah. We got him off the pipe. And then I found this giant container of all these pipes.
Don't show him. He'll be mad at you.
I know. He'll start
forever.
It up again.
I know. You said you gave these to pipeless children.
I do not vape, but give me my pipe back. It's funny, though, those things. And you're right, the listener who said, I will never use that crib.
And you know that, right?
I know,
you absolutely know that.
It was just...
But it's too hard to get rid of. Because then you're like, oh, that's the past. I can't get rid of the past.
But you know me. Half of my stress is just... I have too much stuff. And we do put too much... There's a thing going around Facebook that it's not what we have. It's the time we spend doing things or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But it too much stuff is just really... it clutters your home and it clutters your emotions.
Right. Right.
I need to purge everything.
But do you remember a couple of years ago, you and I had this guy on who wrote a book because he only has 45 things.
Yeah.
Right? I have 45 things in my pocket right now.
I know. See, I couldn't. All right. There's, you know, a method to the madness. You can't.
Right.
You shouldn't have as much as we do.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get into the thing where when I got rid of the bed, I got rid of a desk set. I wanted to buy Michael a new desk for his room. But then I thought, I'm not buying something new till I get rid of something.
Yes.
Like I can replace something I've given away. So
seems
I'm
right.
Starting to get there.
That's progress, right? That's certainly progress.
Do you still
progress.
Have the girls' cribs?
No. No. Those were gone very quickly. I think we gave them to a resale shop.
Yeah, that's what, you know what? That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. That made
or
more
Goodwill.
Sense at the time. Yeah. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land.
Eric, he says he's the human Don Kleppen, but isn't that what a robot Don Kleppen would say?
Exactly what a robot
try to
Don
suck us in and then destroy us. With his laser torpedoes. Eric Zorn is here, the real Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. How are you, Eric?
That's nice what see I you. Would say if I were right. a robot, Eric Zorn.
That's true.
I would say the same
that's
thing.
That's very
so
true.
It's very
How
hard
are you?
To tell. It's very hard to tell. I'm good. I'm feeling human today.
You wanted to talk some politics, so let's. What's
I did.
Going on?
Well, I think it's this Jussie Smollett story just keeps
Won't
going.
Go away.
It's amazing. It just, you know, more turns of the wheel.
Yeah.
We spoke about it last week
before
the mayoral election. Let us not forget that we had a big mayoral election. Remember that? The news just goes so fast these days. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Just so many turns. But, you know, and I thought the Jussie Smollett story is like, what, 2 weeks old now? I think it was a Tuesday. It was 2 weeks ago.
Well, from
tomorrow.
The very beginning, it's 2.5 months old from the time
but
of the...
But the time when the surprise announcement caught everybody off guard that they were dropping these charges against Jussie Smollett.
Yeah.
And you'd think that we'd be done talking about it, but the story just seems to be growing.
Yeah.
And the most recent development was Saturday when there was a news conference at Operation Push with Jesse Jackson, Kim Fox, the state's attorney, and Bobby Rush spoke. Bobby Rush said that the Fraternal Order of Police are racist and they're out for black people. And Jamal Green, a former mayoral hopeful, I don't think he was actually on the ballot, called the Blue Klux Klan, trying to suggest that this whole rift, this whole amount of discontent that's being expressed by police officers and chiefs of police, a lot of white chiefs of police, actually, about the way Kim Fox is dealing with low-level crime, is racist. And so then Kim Fox and her people had this news conference where they basically were trying to fire back at this criticism that's been leveled at them. All of this has been sort of is a kind of a piece of yarn pulled out of the ball of string that is this Jussie Smollett story, where the crime that Jussie Smollett is accused of, was accused of, is a low-level crime. You know, level four felony.
Felony sounds bad.
It sounds bad, but it's class four, and it's not, you know, you file a false police report. It's like, you know, pulling a fire alarm or something like that. But given all the circumstances involved in it, the fact that he's a celebrity, the fact that, there were some hate slogans allegedly yelled at him, that had bleach poured on him, that he had
the noose.
A noose around his neck. They were shouting pro-Trump slogans. This made this a really high-profile case, and then to have it suddenly dropped as part of what Kim Fox says is her overall initiative to deal with low-level crime in this sort of sensible way. Like, hey, we got bigger problems to deal with, and we do have bigger problems to deal with. And I wrote about this case for my Sunday column, and I was hearing from people saying, you know, have you noticed that we had 30 people shot, or was it 24 people shot in 30 hours over the weekend in Chicago? Like, we're getting to the summer violence season.
It's a bad weekend.
I don't see your level of outrage about that being as high as your level of outrage about the way Kim Fox has handled this case. And it is true, but there is this uniqueness to this story, the celebrity element, the fact that it's a really different story, the fact that all of us can understand what's happened here sort of on a basic level, which is that it looks to most people like Jussie Smollett got away with this, that he filed this false report for whatever reason, and that the state's attorney, they pursued this case, they investigated it to a fairly well, and then suddenly they decided, well, we're not going to prosecute. And our reporters did a major story over the weekend where they tried to pick apart sort of day by day, decision by decision, what happened here. Mm-hmm. How did this turn into this huge controversy that just won't end? Mm-hmm. And at the heart of this right now is that Kim Fox, the state's attorney, isn't telling us exactly what happened. If you remember, like right after she dropped these charges, her office came out and said, well, we thought he was guilty, that we had a good case against him. And this is part of our diversionary prosecutions, which they will do in cases. If they've got somebody who's arrested on a minor crime, they don't want to clog the court system. They don't want to clog the jails. They don't want to ruin somebody's life. They don't want to separate families over low-level nonviolent offenses. And I think that's to her credit. I think this is something that's a good initiative in general, which is like you don't want to be expending all your law enforcement resources when you've got a city where there's so much violence.
But normally I'd agree with that, but the amount of man hours that were spent trying to solve this case makes this very different story.
This case was different.
Yes, exactly right.
And it's because, without a doubt, because he was a celebrity.
Well, and I think that most of the public would have been satisfied if Smollett had simply apologized, pleaded guilty.
He didn't do it. What should he apologize for, Eric?
Okay, you're right. Okay, I'm saying. This is where the problem is. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't plead guilty. And if they had just said, okay, you know, we're fining you $10,000 and go away.
Yeah.
I think most people would have been fairly satisfied with
a
that.
Guilty.
With an admission and an apology.
Yes, I agree.
I think people would have, this story would be over by now.
Yep.
If Kim Fox had come out and said, or her office had come out and said, the day that they let these charges go, if they said, you know, this case wasn't as strong as we thought, that the brothers, you know, just to refresh everyone's memory, the charges that he conspired with these two brothers with whom he was working, they're bodybuilders and trainers, and he conspired with them to stage this attack. Mm-hmm. But if they had come out and said, you know, these guys weren't good witnesses, they changed their stories too much, they would not have done well on the stand, we don't think we could have gotten a conviction, we don't think we had proof beyond a reasonable doubt, we're dropping the case. I think the public would have understood that as well. They would have said, they might not have been happy about it, but that's what a prosecutor does. Prosecutor says, okay, look, I there's a difference in what you think is true, and what you can prove in court.
Yeah.
And we see that this happens all the time at the state's attorney's office. It happens all the time in the justice system, where you have a crime or something, and it looks like the person's guilty, but the witnesses aren't there. The evidence has disappeared. Yeah. Alibis show up. Whatever.
It happens.
It
definitely
happens. I think if she had said that. So that seems to be, that was her sort of phase two. She said that her office was saying, well, no, we had a strong case. But this was part of our diversionary thing. Then a couple days later, when the public was not buying that at all, She comes out and says, well, we weren't certain we could get a prosecution. She said that. And so the question is, okay, why? Fine. Okay, you weren't sure. Why is that? And her office has just been silent about mm-hmm. that for a week. And she had an op-ed in the Tribune a week ago Sunday saying, oh, I couldn't be certain about this. So why? Why? And she hasn't said why. Her deputy hasn't said why.
That's what the problem is. No one's talking.
That is the problem. And I said, as I was saying, our reporters did this very in-depth story. Everybody was talking to them, including the defense attorney, Mark Garagos, the celebrity defense attorney for Smollett, who is raising all kinds of issues. He has a podcast, and on his podcast a week ago, he intimated that there was some sort of a sexual relationship between one of the brothers
and Jussie Smollett.
Jussie's gay, and he intimated that there was he said, like, well, one of them spent the night with Jussie shortly before the attack. It's like, what? Like, mm-hmm. okay, so is that a motive to beat him up? Is mm-hmm. that a motive not to beat him up? I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but they're talking.
Do we know that part of the story to be true, or is that just something
I asked the attorney for the brothers, and she said that was not true, and she had not. She said she'd heard that from other. She'd been asked that question by some other reporters, and it's not true as far as she knows.
Yeah.
So you've got all this stories being told by everyone all around, but the person at the center of it, who has the ability, I think, even still, to come out and say, "Look, here's our file. Here's what happened here.
Yeah.
Here's everything that happened. Here's why we had to make this decision." She could still salvage it, but right now it's just looking to the public and to these white police chiefs, like she's letting him go because he's a celebrity, maybe because he's a black celebrity. I mean, I don't really think that this originally was a racial question when the public was upset about this. I don't think the public was mad at Kim Fox because she's black. I don't think they're mad at Jussie Smollett because he's black.
Although Jussie Smollett made it racist.
Well, he said it was a racist attack.
He said it was a racist attack, but I think that the public anger about this was not based on that. It has become racially polarizing. That's why the story keeps growing in this really strange way, which is that suddenly you've got Bobby Rush and Operation Push calling insinuating that everybody who's criticizing Kim Fox over this is doing this because she's a powerful black woman.
Yeah.
And then you've got the FOP standing up there with this big group of all white police chiefs criticizing Kim Fox, which looks like it has a racial component. So it's become this sort of delicate situation, and we're having it happen right as we're going into the violent season, as we saw this weekend. When it gets warm, this city gets to be very dangerous in certain neighborhoods.
But when you say, of all the people blindsided by this case, Eddie Johnson would be at the top of the heap, wouldn't he?
Eddie Johnson was, and he was critical at first. He's toned it down some lately.
A little bit.
He's pulled back on criticizing. He wants to just move ahead, I think. And he realizes, as most people realize, as I think Kim Fox realizes, which is that the police have to work cooperatively with prosecutors, that they, as you know, the beginning of Law and Order, you know, these are the two institutions that together mm-hmm. make our streets safer, enforce the law, bring people to justice.
Yep.
And we need that. We absolutely need good policing, and we need good prosecutorial work. We need to keep bad people off the street. That's all a given.
We need them on the same team,
but you've got them at odds right now over this stupid case.
I know.
And I go back to, and people, you know, I'm critical of Kim Fox here. I was supportive of her. I was highly critical of her predecessor, Anita Alvarez. I thought she botched a bunch of cases.
Yeah.
And I was really kind of enthusiastic about Kim Fox. And I think some of what Kim Fox has been doing in her office has been really good. I think she's undermining all of that with what she's been doing with this case.
Right.
She's making people think that she's not about justice, that she's about clout, she's about
should
celebrity.
Should she step down?
No, I don't think she should
not
step down.
Step
she's
down.
Running for re-election in a year, less than a year. It'll be March. It'll be 11 months from now. There'll be the primary for state's attorney, Democratic primary, which is essentially the election.
But people will hold a grudge. I mean, Toni Preckwinkle, every time we think of her, we go, oh, no, she taxed our Mountain Dew, so we can't vote her.
She taxed our Mountain Dew, and she, you know, I think she paid a really heavy price for that.
Yeah.
And it was, she had actually rescinded that tax, a year and a half or so, 2 years earlier, but it stuck with people. That's a whole other topic to talk about.
Is
how in the world did we get a 74% landslide victory for Lori Lightfoot? I predicted 50. I was at a forum the week before, and I predicted that she was going to win, 56-44, the same ratio that Rahm Emanuel beat Chuy Garcia four years earlier. I thought that seemed about right. But
nope.
And a couple different. People thought, well, that's kind of I know. Ambitious.
I know. But we'll talk more about this and other topics. Eric Zorn is here. You want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Little musical interlude.
Love the music. Coming up, tune into the stream and hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold on television. I just watched a television show that is so funny and so sad at the exact same time. It's very hard to pull them off simultaneously. I'll explain what the show is and how you can see it. It's sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60 Minute Men.
Go back to Eric Zorn.
Is it Veep?
No, it is not. That's a great guess, but it is not.
It's not a great guess.
I watched that last night. It's great.
Terrible.
Love
what
Veep.
A great show.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a new
goodness.
Show, a new series that I watch that I want to talk to you about on the stream as well.
All right.
Since I'm not on the stream, we've been watching This Is Us. Do you guys watch that?
Yes.
Love This Is Us.
Yeah. That's such a good show.
Very moving.
Yes. Really enjoy that.
And the season's over already.
Well, but see, not for me because I
Oh, you have a few more
yet.
Episodes
still
back
streaming,
up?
All right. Still streaming. I'm still backlogged. So.
All right.
Anyway. So it's been this whole mayor's race.
Yes.
Just this.
You're
size,
surprised
the
at the landslide.
Of our victory. Well, and the latest news today, I don't know if you guys heard this, was, you know, there's this whole controversy over Lincoln Yards, which is this development near Northwest Side. Mm-hmm. This is the former Finkel Steel factory. It's an Armitage in the expressway, basically. Mm-hmm. You know that area? It's like this prime piece of land. Sterling Bay is going to develop it, huge project. And it's been kind of rushed through the zoning process. And people and Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle, as they're campaigning, were saying, like, hey, let's slow our roll up on this a little bit. We're not really sure, especially with the tax incentive that's given to Sterling Bay. And they were going to vote on it today in the finance committee in city council. And then they were going to vote. The full council was going to vote on Wednesday, kind of getting it done before Mayor-elect Lightfoot takes office in the middle of next month. And just today, Rahm Emanuel, just this morning, sent out a news release saying, in deference to the mayor-elect, we're going to hold off on considering this.
And what do you think is going on?
It's a $1.3 billion tax incentive for Sterling Bay to do infrastructure improvement and so on. I think that Mayor Emanuel has realized the size of Lori Lightfoot's victory and the fact that it wasn't just Lori Lightfoot. It was other people in the council. Pat O'Connor, the powerful finance committee chair, who had just taken over for Ed Burke, who was the finance committee chair. These are sort of old lions of the city council, were voted out. Burke has not been voted out, but O'Connor was voted out. And there's just been this change in council. The voters have really expressed, I think, a desire for change. And I really think that's the only thing that, to me, explains the size of this landslide that Lori Lightfoot won, is that voters had just decided that Lori Lightfoot was new and Tony Preckwinkle was old, because there wasn't a ton of difference between these two candidates in terms of policy positions, that they were very, very similar. And so that's why I was thinking it was going to be kind of close, and that this thing that Lori Lightfoot being somebody new was going to be a smaller factor.
Yeah.
But voters are really, really in the mood to have Chicago have a change for Chicago, and I think that's what we saw in this race. And
so
I think Mayor Emanuel this morning realized, like, okay, let's just hold off. I will pass this on to the next mayor and let her decide about this tax increment financing plan for Sterling Bay and for this new thing. And Lincoln Yards, if it does go through, is going to be a major, major development up there. It's going to be high rises, residences. You know, it is not just a little housing development. It's
You're
a
saying
commercial.
If it goes through, is the it,
well, no,
to it, believe
it's
it won't?
Probably going to go through. I think it's such a prime piece of land, and the zoning has been approved. It's the financing that needs to be okayed, and how much is the city going to help?
Right.
Do things like you've been up there. You know, the Armitage, way that it kind of jogs and goes over the river. It's terrible. It needs to be fixed, straightened out, and they're going to pay money for that. So. It's going to happen. The question is, you know, who's going to pay for it, who's going to be on the hook for it. So I'm excited about Mayor Emanuel backing off and the new mayor sort of already kind of taking over. Yeah.
Eric, thank you.
Good to see you guys.
Read Eric, of course, in the Chicago Tribune, or listen to him here every Monday.
I
or
do
also
both.
The Mincing Rascals. You can do
Rascals.
That as well.
Nominated again for a Lissa Gore Award.
How about that?
I know. I don't have to wear to the ceremony.
Last year.
I don't, if I wear the same thing to the ceremony,
people will
talk. I know they will talk.
Thank you, Eric.